Are you insane?
They are insane!
You're in the hands of an adolescent.
It is a cellular peptide cake.
Inaccurate.
But Met Frosting.
It does like you.
How you doing, Mike?
That man is bereft of passion and imagination.
Mr. Kim.
Hi, Christopher. I'm Nero.
Let the lesson begin.
You're carving us up like a roast.
To the Horatio, gentlemen.
The Horatio.
There's a story I heard as a child, a parable, and I never forgot it. A scorpion was walking along the bank of a river, wondering how to get to the other side. Suddenly, he saw a fox. He asked the fox to take him on his back across the river. The fox said, "No. If I do that, it'll sting me, and I'll drown." The scorpion assured him, "If I did that, we'd both drown." So the fox thought about it, finally agreed. So the scorpion climbed up on his back, and the fox began to swim. But halfway across the river, the scorpion stung him. As the poison filled his veins, the fox turned to the scorpion and said, "Why did you do that? Now you'll drown too." "I couldn't help it," said the scorpion. "It's my nature."
Does it come back to the scorpion and the frog, or as an analogy, or?
Nope, that's it.
That's the whole thing.
So, all right, we're starting up here. We've been rolling all through that.
Silence.
Yes. That silence. No, we could hear it. I could hear it.
Oh, okay.
Could you hear it too, Kim?
Near the microphone for a while.
Yeah, we could all hear it. We're all quite comfortable up here. Hello, everyone. Hello. Welcome, all you frogs, all you foxes, all you scorpions. All you snakes, all you turtles, as part of some of the other parts of that fable, the derivatives of that
more
fable. What?
There's more?
We'll
you mean other that. Pairs of animals?
Well, there's other things. All right, so
this is a deep dive into this parable.
This is a deep dive. Hello, everyone. My name is Mike McCafferty. I just want to talk about Star Trek. I'm joined by two gadabouts who are...
Kim Miller.
Otherwise known as...
The Doctor.
Yes, and...
I'm Jason McCarris, otherwise known as Scorpion Number 2.
A scorpion rode on a scorpion's back. Have you ever heard of the tale of the scorpion riding the scorpion's back? All right, so if you listen to the last couple episodes, I have made allusions to the scorpion, the frog and the scorpion. And I've always remembered this story from this episode 26, season 3 of Voyager. And it's been such an iconic story, even though I don't remember very much of the actual episode, but I referenced it like twice now in two different podcasts. And I thought, well, I should go back and watch the original one and have Kim watch it and have Jason, who has never seen any Voyager, watch it.
It's true.
He hasn't even seen the rest of the episode. He got to this point.
I saw about 35 minutes or so.
35?
Right before the scene that Mike wanted me to watch and fell asleep.
I know, he couldn't.
Just watch the commercials.
So we are vastly ill-informed for this episode, but we
didn't
don't
mention
care.
The name of the episode.
Well, it's Scorpion. Scorpion Part 1. Of all things.
And it was the end of season 3, correct?
The end of season 3. And this is, it's funny because as I was watching this, I was telling Kim this before we started potting, that this is the episode that I started to fall away from Voyager.
Oh, dear.
Season 2.
This is the episode with the first time in maybe like 15 years, I got those same feelings. So we can kind of go through it and deal with my issues.
You froze there for a moment during your speech. Passion speech about falling away from Voyager. You fell away from the podcast as well.
Hopefully that came in. I'll repeat it again because it's so iconic.
It's, yes.
Kim, did I freeze?
It's iconic, yeah. Okay? Yeah, but we got the gist of what you were saying.
All right.
Kid.
All right, so here we are.
That was
so
a angry. Cat.
That was a cat.
I was like, what the hell is that?
House sitting in Coronado with three great blue Russians.
Three blue Russians. She's
collusion. There's no collusion. Between her and these blue Russians.
Russian blue. That's what it is. Whoops.
Oh, Russian blue. Three blue Russians.
I'm having a white Russian over here.
Or something.
Uh-oh, Jason's into the wine again.
Oh, my gosh. Yes. She's unloading. I still have this very hot wine here I can drink, but I'll hold off on that.
It's not hot enough.
Sake.
Not hot enough. All right, so we're going back. We're watching this episode. We're just kind of, you know, like diving. We're diving lightly. We're diving to shallow water on this
because
we're
not
very well informed. But
well, so explain again how this is the episode that started to make you fall away from Voyager.
Well, we can get into it like piece by piece, but ultimately, I think it was the decision that Janeway made. It's this iconic moment where she decides that yes, I'm going to side with the Borg. I'm going to make this deal with the devil, and I'm going to kind of throw away what Starfleet means in order to get my crew home.
Wait, you want to set up what you're talking about? Why does she make that deal?
Well, we'll get into it. Jason wanted the answer, because Jason doesn't know the answer, because he watched 35 minutes. Last 3 minutes is a whole discussion about you, Jason. I didn't want to give it away, but it's... Have you ever heard the story about Jason and the Scorpion?
Scorpion carried Jason across the river.
I just thought it ended with more of John Rhys-Davies in the holodeck. Leonardo da Vinci with the bad accent.
Hey!
No, actually, it doesn't. Although... All right, but it starts off with that. Actually, it starts off with this very short teaser.
Since I've never seen an episode of Voyager, I thought for a second, do they just time travel in every episode? I don't understand what happens.
The Voyager holodeck, which at some points in time they was very limited to use, but like the third season, they didn't really care. So, Jason, as a recap of this season of this series, Voyager is a ship which is tossed into the Delta Quadrant. Alpha, Beta, Gamma, Delta. It's 75,000 light years away from the Federation. No way of getting home. They have to travel it back. It's going to take them 75 years. Maybe it's 100,000 light years. I don't remember how long it was, but it's going to be 75 years to get home, which they're all super cool with. Like, there's very little dissension. They get on board with the bad guys. Like, half of their crew is killed. And then they have to, like, join up with the Maquis, who is, like, a bad enemy anyway. These resistance fighters, basically. And everyone's cool with that. They're like, okay, let's do that. So they start heading home, and they fight some really terrible aliens along the way. And then we come to this episode, the end of the season, and it starts off with the Borg.
And the Borg are from the Delta Quadrant, right?
Yes, that's ostensibly where they come from, and they have taken over a large swath of the Delta Quadrant.
Thousands of stars.
Thousands of star systems. Now, we should also point out, too, that the Borg really weren't seen in Star Trek Deep Space Nine. They had just been seen in Star Trek First Contact about a year or two earlier, which is where they got a lot of those costumes to the Borg. They're like, oh, now we got costumes. Let's use this.
And they first appeared in Next Generation, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, this is
I remember
correct.
When I hadn't really watched Next Generation, but I do remember the Borg being a part of it, and I'd seen little bits and pieces of episodes where it was happening. I thought it was pretty cool.
Yeah, it is pretty cool. It's the Borg are a great enemy, which slowly got watered down into just kind of meh.
Yeah.
But when they first came out, and I think I've told you guys this, like I was away at summer camp, not taking it, but being a counselor, and Tony Caselli, friend of the podcast, left me a voicemail on my... my home voicemail, not voicemail, actually a voice message on my voice recorder at home said, Mike, you've got to watch this episode.
The home answering machine.
My answering machine, that's what it's called. I have to dig deep for that.
So he left a message just saying, you got to watch it?
Basically, yeah. Because I was gone, and then he left a message on my answering machine. It's like, oh my God, Mike, you've got to watch it. It's so damn cool. I'm like, okay. So I came home I had a day off and like I recorded it. I'm like, oh my God, this is so great. And then I was on board with Star Trek Next Generation from that point on. This sort of feels like they kind of want to, they're kind of going back to the well. It's like, well, let's see, season three, we don't know what to do. Let's bring back the Borg. And they start off iconically in the end of third season by destroying two Borg cubes as though they're nothing.
Mm-hmm.
With mysterious yellow lightning bolts. Now, Jason, you've seen First Contact. Is this correct?
I've not seen First. I haven't seen any of the Next Generation films.
Oh geez. Oh, so you are totally in the dark on this.
Kim is aghast. They're all terrible. Come on, aren't they?
Oh, boring.
Jason is our Borg in this organization. Yeah.
I will assimilate you all with my negativity about Star Trek.
Yes. Well, Borg are these kind of zombie meets vampire-like creatures.
Right.
They can't be stopped. They adapt to anything.
They all function as a collective unit.
Right.
Yeah, so...
And there was, you know, a little more of a expansion of that with the when they talked about the nanobots getting into the bloodstream and taking over.
Yeah, yeah, that was kind of a, I guess that was in the original Next Generation stuff.
Was it?
But yeah, it was. Their whole idea is that
did they show a graphic of each blood cell being taken over by the nanobots?
No, they didn't talk about that back then.
I don't remember that.
They didn't get into the technology of how they actually take over a body.
Yeah.
No, but in First Contact they did with the weird little like two-pronged vampire
right.
fangs that come
yeah,
out
yeah.
and poke people in the neck.
Right.
Which I thought was kind of dumb. It's like
which that one the guy kept trying to the Borg was kept attempting to do it into the bio ship and it was
yeah.
not taken.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, he's like, there's nothing that can pierce it, you know, or it can pierce anything.
Well, that was one of the questions I had for you guys because I did know about the Borg and I'm not super familiar with them, but I do remember seeing in Next Generation 2 something like this where they were able to kind of just walk around, lower your weapons because as you walk by, it's not threatening and they won't even bother to you know, turn around. So do they just kind of go on their own and they don't really, they're not just, they don't care unless they're being threatened? I don't understand.
Well,
it's sort of like the zombie principle where if you're really quiet or covered in other zombie blood, they'll leave you alone.
The original idea for it was if you watch like the second season episode of Next Generation called Q-Who, Picard tells Q, the super powerful alien, sort of like a Trelane, like an upgrade of Trelane, says, we don't need you. We're super confident in our abilities. You know, we don't need any of your help. Because Q's like, I want to be part of the ship. But he's like, no. So he takes them, like, to the Delta Quadrant, introduces them to the Borg. And the Borg are so powerful compared to the Federation that they basically ignore the Enterprise. Like, you can walk on the ship, on the Borg ship, and they're like, you know, we don't care. It's sort of like seeing an ant on your
right.
kitchen floor. It's like, you know, I could stop
Is it worth,
them.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not
worth
it's not
my
worth
time.
It. But if he stings you, that's a problem. So in the first couple of episodes, they were able to walk around a little bit and kind of like check out the Borg, and the Borg was like, we don't care.
Right.
But then they started becoming more and more interested in humans, and they started saying, we're going to assimilate you. We're going to take over your entire planet, turn you all into robots, you know, the entire Alpha Quadrant. So First Contact was the last time we saw them, and in that we were introduced to a Borg Queen, which was kind of also a little wonky. I'm not super thrilled with that. But anyways, we have to provide Jason with this huge backstory about the Borg here. But that's okay, because...
We'll edit this right out.
You've heard this podcast. None of it is edited. Including the part where I tell the doctor to move her microphone away from the fan because it sounds like we're next to a refrigerator. The fan on your computer.
Oh. I have a fan in my computer?
Yes, you have a fan in your computer, doctor.
How's that? Now it's on the sofa.
All right.
That's a little better.
Why did you say so?
Where'd she go? There.
Ah.
Now we're all falling apart. It's called Kim's fault.
I moved the microphone and it lost the signal.
And it caused Mike to drop his internet signal.
Uh-oh, what happened?
The Borg have taken over.
Oh, my God.
We're fine. You're falling apart.
Well, you guys are falling apart for me.
Because your internet connection is falling out.
Yeah.
The doctor and I are fine. We can hear each other.
Means
you are the...
Suck through that portal behind you.
Yes.
Temporal rift.
This biological ship is pulling away at this spider
yeah,
cave.
Yeah, biological ship. Species 8472.
So anyway, they're in the Delta Quadrant.
So anyway, they're in the Delta Quadrant. Meanwhile...
And they need to pass through this whole region filled with Borg cubes.
Yeah, so they finally reached the Borg. They've gotten through the dummies of the Kazon and the phage goofballs.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Okay, so the first season of Voyager, so we might just do one episode.
You can't just recap all of Voyager right now?
We might have
first
to,
three seasons?
Be, yeah, we might as well, because we've never really talked about Voyager, and we might never talk about it again.
we still have it. Terrible.
Well,
couple episodes on Deep Space Nine.
I did, and I did a couple of on Voyager, I think with Callie and Dave, Dave Michelson, friends of the pod, but it becomes too much effort. So we've cast them into the Delta Quadrant.
Effort, the enemy of this podcast.
Well, it's the enemy of everything, yes. Everything takes too much effort.
You just wanted to talk about the parable, and it turned into a whole history of the Borg, parts one.
I did. Well, because Jason's here, and the only reason I wanted Jason, I wanted to talk about the parable, and Jason didn't watch the parable. He watched everything up to the parable.
You watched 35 minutes of it.
I know,
35 parable, minutes. That's right.
It's a minute 38. It's the only thing I want to talk about.
It's like a 42-minute episode. I thought I got pretty close to finishing it out.
No one needs to watch the end of anything. Nothing happened.
I collapsed into a heap. It was so exciting, I couldn't take it.
It's fused with other bodies.
I actually was enjoying it. I was enjoying it quite a bit.
Well, maybe he's going to have a new Voyager correspondent here.
Except for the special effects. Oh, my God.
It's 1997. Shut up.
They were trying to get into the CGI movement. That alien of the bioship. Like, oh, my God.
Oh, it wasn't bad.
It looks like it was the second one after young Sherlock Holmes. It's communicating with me telepathically.
You know 20-year-old Jason would have been fascinated by
that. Oh, sure.
You'd be like, that's awesome. Call Mike on his answering machine at home. Hey, this is Mike. This is Sarah. We can't come to the phone right now.
No, this is Camp Counselor Mike. It was Free Sarah.
This is like 1988, Kim.
Yeah.
88? No. 97.
Wait, yeah, what years was Voyager on?
Oh, well, I thought you were talking about Best of Both Worlds.
Oh, right, because it was Next Gen you were talking about, yeah.
Yeah, no, that was actually, I was dating Sarah. This might actually be like a third season. Maybe it was actually when I met my wife that I stopped watching Voyager.
Wait a minute. I see a correlation here.
It's a direct correlation.
96?
We had our first date in 97. Valentine's Day 97. So I wonder what let's see if I can...
Tangents. So the Borg.
Will you take over a little bit?
There's a corridor in Borg space.
The doctor is...
Where Mike met Sarah. He met Mike.
In the Gamma Quadrant.
They met in the Delta Quadrant. After I snapped my fingers and sent them both there. There's a passage through Borg space that they dubbed the Northwest Passage.
Yes, I did see the Northwest Passage.
Clear of Borg cubes, but it's full of gravimetric waves or something like that. It's going to be a turbulent ride, but they decide to chance it.
Yes,
I wanted to ask you also about the guy who's giving the parable, who I don't know because I've never watched an episode of this show, but he looks like he's a Native American with a Mike Tyson tattoo on his face.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Chakotay.
Yes, Chakotay. Yeah.
Monotone. That means monotone.
Yes.
It means no acting.
He who speaks monotone.
Chakotay, I don't even know what the hell his story is. He became such a boring character. So here's the deal. Robert Beltran kind of hated doing Star Trek Voyager for a long time. Okay. I remember one time, like, I was reading a TV Guide interview, and he's like disgruntled, which, like, you don't want to see in a TV Guide interview, right? It's like TV Guide is the most, like, the lightest, fluffiest thing you're ever going to have. And his quote was like, we're always just going in some bullshit corridor and firing bullshit torpedoes or something. I'm like, oh my God. He was so angry about being on this show. And I'm like, dude, you're making hundreds of thousands of dollars. Be okay with that. All right, so Scorpion aired May 21st, 1997.
Oh, okay.
So I was dating my wife, and then I decided to get away from Voyager. I decided to break up with Voyager.
Get away from Voyager.
I had to go through the Northwest Passage.
Took a flight.
Filled with gravimetric anomalies. They don't know why. But the Voyager crew, they are motivated to go through this Northwest Passage because there's no other way around it. They can't go up or down.
Borg space is huge. Can't go around
it. This is a spiral galaxy. I just want to point that out. They could go up or down and then just go around it.
What, you, Neil deGrasse Tyson, shut up.
Well, actually.
Who is that?
That's Neil Tyson. You ever see that?
Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Oh, no, it sounded like, I don't know, Mr. Rogers?
Well, did you ever see the Key and Peele parody of it?
No.
Of him?
I haven't either. I got to check it out.
Oh, it's really funny. Yeah, it's him with his wife. They do like three separate things. It's really funny. He over-explains everything to her using like the universe as a fundamental thing of like why he's late, you know, for going out for this dinner. And it's very funny.
Tangent.
That's okay.
So anyway, scorpions and frogs.
Scorpions and frogs.
And foxes.
They go through this Northwest Passage, and all of a sudden, like, oddly enough, these Borg cubes start chasing them.
15 cubes start. Right.
No, let's be clear. There's one, then two,
yes,
then three, then four, then five, and then 15. I watched it a couple of times. I don't know why they found the need to, like a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 15.
Sounds cool.
They just say 1, 2, 15, or 1, 3, 7, 15.
Nitpicky.
Anyway. I am picking. It's such a weird. I mean, it's actually a good scene. It's actually kind of a scary scene because you see them behind them. It's like, oh my god, this is serious. They're I forgot dead. What happened. Yeah. They're dead, and then they just go past them.
Mm-hmm.
They scan them real quick, and then they keep on going. You're like, what the hell's that all about?
Mm-hmm.
Then
they catch up with them, right? And there's just complete destruction.
Yeah, they're all destroyed. Every single one of them completely just like obliterated.
Mm-hmm.
So, Jason, like, this is the unthinkable in Star Trek world at this point in time. The Borg are painted as the, you know, biggest, baddest villains
right.
in the Alpha or Delta Quadrant. In the Gamma Quadrant, it's the Dominion, but we'll get to that some other time. Okay. So these guys are super badasses and just 15 ships gone.
Mm-hmm.
So, they got to go on the ship and find out what's going on, because why not, right?
They find among them this bio ship that's attached to one of the semi-destroyed cubes, and there's still some life signs in all the wreckage.
Yeah.
So that's when they explore and discover that, hey, this thing is organic.
Yeah, so they go on this kind of long, and I read that the director kind of based this whole encounter off of Alien kind of the movie. The original Alien, you know, the kind of, you know, skulking around through the corridors and can't see the monster, and which is a good thing, because that monster, whew, man. we should also point out, too, that Cass
is
finally becoming a very interesting character. Now,
is she?
Cass,
jeez, what was she before? Because I found her quite annoying in this episode.
All those visions she was having annoyed
She's just blonde Troy. I'm like, is she just doing exactly what Troy does? With the same soothing voice.
Here's the thing. This is actually a pretty good episode if you've never watched Voyager and you want to just catch up and like skip past three seasons. This is what we're doing here. I'm going to tell you guys everything about this. So Cass was an Okampa who she showed up in the very first episode with Neelix. And her big thing was that her species only lived 9 years. And then they died. So that's their thing, which I guess like they were like very optimistic, like, hey man, in 9 years we've got a great storyline coming up, you just wait, Cass, you just wait, Jennifer Bean.
So they're fully grown after a couple of years or something, or so how do they only last 9 years? Okay,
yeah, so they're pretty much, you know, after a couple of years they're fully grown. She's in love with Neelix, the alien. That kind of fell away after the first couple seasons because no one really cared about that. And she was kind of a character that was kind of just wasn't that interesting. Like, okay, great. So you're only alive for 9 years. Who cares? You know, I mean, that's not a pressing problem to have. You know, I think they thought originally be a great idea. Like, oh, my God, what would it be like to only live for 9 years? Like, well, it's going to be two more years than this series is going to go on for. So, I mean, we'll just, you know, that'll be it. But they really thought it'd be kind of a good idea, and it just didn't work out.
So was she supposed to be the ship's counselor like Troy, or I don't know what her character does?
No. Okay. She just started to develop these psychic powers this season, like the last few episodes.
Oh, okay.
Before, she was like nothing. She was just like, I'm just like this person, and she became like the doctor's nurse, basically.
Mm-hmm.
But then she starts getting these psychic powers.
Right.
In anticipation of her coming back in the fourth season and having even more to do. And we'll discuss that in a moment.
Okay.
I started watching Voyager back when it first aired, and I quickly lost interest, and I never came back to it.
Right when I started dating my wife, I bet.
yes, Sarah, that was, I decided to leave Voyager.
It was the one event that disabled the Delta Quadrant.
Yes, it's the Northwest Passage through Voyager as a series.
I think I only watched maybe 4 or 5 episodes of season one, and I was like, meh.
I watched a lot of them. Like, I tried to stick with it because I was watching Deep Space Nine, and I was watching Voyager. Now, Voyager was on UPN. This was their flagship show.
Right.
So, like, they were really all in on this. Got huge ratings to start out with the first couple seasons, and then really started to diminish. So they were all in on this. And, like, they were kind of running concurrently with Deep Space Nine, so I got to, you know, I tried to watch that. But since I was in syndication, you could watch it whenever you wanted to. And this only came out, like, once a week. So if you missed it, you're done.
But when you say concurrently, you're talking about the reruns of Deep Space Nine were on, because there were actually both series were running at the same time on different networks.
Yeah, they overlapped. There was
okay.
Deep Space Nine was finishing their third season, I think, and they had like 3 months to their own, and then Voyager came out. And so like, aha, here we are. And that's because UPN really wanted a big show.
Yeah,
and they were taking shows off of syndication.
They put all their eggs in the Star Trek basket.
They did, yeah. They went all in on that. And so they went for this show, the series, and it did pretty well, but then it started to flag. And this season is when they're deciding to make their big move. Like, let's shake things up, because we're just being a clone of the Next Generation. Didn't work out. Mm-hmm. All right, so meanwhile, where are we? So we have this cast character who's getting these weird psychic visions of toys.
Harry Kim injured...
Yes.
Yeah, Harry Kim injured.
The doctor's namesake.
Yes. That's right. Mr. Kim.
Mr. Kim. And she sees the pile of, what do you mean, toys?
Those are action figures cut up and glued together.
Really?
What, do you mean the pile of bodies that she saw in the...
Yes.
Are you serious?
I was looking at Memory Alpha, and I because when you look at it in slightly high definition, I don't know what actually resolution this is.
It's still in a standard def, I think.
Is it? But at least it's blown up, and it's a little clearer. It looks terrible. It's like,
Like
there's one shot. Let me see if I can find
the big pile of them. I
could be completely wrong, but I think I remember reading that they couldn't upgrade Voyager into high definition because the special effects were all standard definition or something like that? Or
yeah, the thing is with both this and I believe with Deep Space Nine is what happened is they edited in tape, I guess. They just basically melded the visual effects to the videotape or something. They had like, you know...
it doesn't exist separately.
Yeah, so you can't separate it. The Next Generation they did.
Right.
They separated those. But for Voyager and Deep Space Nine, I think... they're kind of inexorably linked, so you'd have to go through every single frame, digitally wipe it out, get the digital effects out. So, let me see if I can find this. That doesn't matter. Yeah, they were. Those are actually just. Oh, here it is. Yeah, the pile of dismembered Borg seeing in the disabled cube was actually a 12-inch pile of Playmate toys action figures.
Wow.
He didn't have the budget or the time to recreate full-scale body chunks. So in that scene, you're just walking around a bunch of toys, man. It's pretty awesome.
This would be great if Kim was listening to this podcast and actually, you know, with us here. She has no idea what you're talking about.
So Kim...
she's getting up, turning the lights on and off. And
oh, my God. She's
if you're watching the video portion of this podcast, this is incredible. Should we just pretend like you're still completing the same sentence you were doing? Yeah. Okay, she's putting her headphones back in.
And I think if Kim agrees with me, I think that's probably the best solution for us.
Huh?
Kim.
What?
You weren't listening?
I was trying to turn more light on.
Jesus, now it's like a
thousand
suns.
It got dark all of
there.
A sudden, and now it's like super bright.
He has this light on a timer, and I don't know how to turn it on independent of the timer. I just had to turn on other lights.
Oh, my God.
Why do you have to point it out?
Because I was telling this long story about action figure, and you walked away, and Jason pointed out. I was
Jason's listening.
I was deep.
was like, what the hell happened? The doctor just picked up and walked away. I don't care what you're talking about. This is boring.
Off. Close my laptop and leave.
You wonder why I'm doing this on scorpions? This is why. I've got scorpions all over my life.
I think we need to talk about your late obsession with this parable.
We're almost
Mike,
there.
Mike
We're
feels
so close.
He's the only frog in the world, and everyone is a scorpion.
I'm the only fox now. I've decided I'm the only fox.
Fox,
now.
Yes.
Can you talk about your tweet?
All right, so they walk down through this crazy ship, through all the toys. What?
I hear you.
Yeah, we're picking up now.
Okay, so they walk around through the ship of toys, basically filled with Borg toys. And then finally, this horrible CGI monster comes and gets him with this biological ship. And he scratches Harry Kim just on the chest, just very lightly on the chest.
Yeah.
These are the bane of the Borg. Ripped apart hundreds of Borg, stacked them in a strange pile, can only scratch Harry Kim. That is how impervious he is.
Right as they're being beamed back.
You know, actually, that's actually apropos of Harry Kim, who is fairly indestructible. That'll get into my Jennifer Lean story. So,
okay.
So you can see that they're trying to build up Kes. Mm-hmm. Kes, they're like, man, she's not that interesting of a character. We got to build her up. They knew they were going to bring in a new Borg character, 7 of 9, mm-hmm. for 4th season. They knew that. Even as they were writing this episode. Like,
oh, really? They didn't even introduce her until season 4?
Nope. Yeah,
oh, wow.
She didn't come into season 4.
Yeah, didn't. See, the last 7 minutes. Jason. This episode introduces her character.
But this is season 3.
Yes.
No, this episode does not introduce her character, but it sets up the
part 2.
It sets it up. So, okay. Yeah, part 2 does. So
thanks,
they were like,
Kim.
Okay, so what we're going to... Mr. Kim,
I'm going to go walk around the room. Tired of you
talk
both.
About more toys. You know, we have like 2.5 weeks now between podcasts. It seems like we should be able to prepare these better.
Should be 5 weeks.
Should be a million weeks. We should just close up shop. So here's my story. So
yes.
they were going like, in order to bring in this new character, they were going to get rid of one character. It's like, okay, well, we've got to save the money, so we'll get rid of one character and just take that money and give it to this new character. Yes, exactly what they're going to do. And that was going to be Garrett Wang, Harry Kim. They were like, he's not working out, you know, he just plays a clarinet. That's the only thing he's got going for him. That's his character arc, basically. So you can see them building up this character of Kes. So, she's going to have psychic powers, and she's going to talk to species 8472. This is all great. And they're about ready to pull the trigger on this, and then People Magazine came out with their 50 Most Beautiful People issue. And in that issue, one of the 50 was Garrett Wang.
Really?
And because of that, they did not get rid of him. UPN's like, no, you cannot get rid of him. He's one of the 50 most beautiful people.
Okay.
And so instead, I know this is the most bonkers part of the story, is that they're like, well, let's just get rid of Kes. Oh. And so they got rid of her character.
Is that sad? She was around till the end of the series. What?
No, she disappears like the next episode after this one in The Gift. She's gone.
Oh, I got to keep watching. I got to see that. I didn't know that.
And then she comes back for one more episode. And
should
then
I ask
she...
how she dies, or should I just watch it? Spoiler.
Oh, she doesn't die. She just goes away. But it's terrible. I mean, like, I read all about it, and they like the whole crew was upset, and they took her out for dinner, and Kate Mulgrew was in tears at the last scene, and
no,
yeah, it kind of sucked. And then Jennifer Lean has had a rough period of time after that. She has been arrested several times.
Yeah,
she exposed herself in front of children. Was
addiction problem, you think?
She got arrested this year for DUI, I think twice, or once DUI, once driving without a license. So she's, we wish her the best, but Catherine Janeway, or Kate Mulgrew said that, you know, I think there's going to be good things coming up for her now, like after she left the show. It's like,
Whoa. Crazy. How come Jason and I are fine when this happens?
Because he's recording in the spider cave.
Oh. Species 8472 is taking over. Oh. We all turn off our cameras. What is this problem?
Oh, is are you guys, are we getting some
We issue? Lost yeah, you for you, about 10, 15 seconds.
Yeah.
Oh, it was the last thing you heard me say.
I heard Corgiolo.
That's exactly what I said, Corgiolo.
Fine. Continue.
I've turned off everything. I've turned off, it's just that I'm in this spider cave. I can't, the spiders, they're everywhere.
You should train them to become nanobots to carry the Wi-Fi signal.
Yes, that's a good segue because Kim, you can see that they're setting up for him to die because he gets covered in this goop.
Yeah.
And basically, like, they're like, we don't see him after he gets knocked out. He's got the weird, like, tendril going in his mouth.
Yeah.
And no one thought to take that out of his mouth. Jesus, guys.
Just leave it there. It's fine.
You got a straw in your mouth, man. Take that out, dudes.
And the doctor says that he's being eaten alive.
From the inside.
Yeah. Yes, yeah. From the inside. Yeah, terrifying. Terrifying stuff here. But then they find a way to stop it, I think. He starts to work on a way to stop mm-hmm. it.
Yeah, the doctor and starts then, working on those little nanites or whatever they are.
The nanites, right. And then Janeway decides to have a long discussion with Leonardo da Vinci. Because that's appropriate.
In the middle of a crisis, too, right?
Yeah.
Oh, just much. Like, I'm going to go talk to this hologram. Yeah. I'm
going to go look Captain. At shadows.
What do you see, Catherine? Now, didn't we watch an episode earlier? Catherine.
Yes.
With Da Vinci?
Yeah.
Which one was that?
Why did you make me watch that? I forgot.
Remember that?
John Rhys Davis was babies, was it?
Yes, I'd forgotten he was in this one. Katharina, we will build this flying ship. Have you ever thought of, instead of a sparrow, making it a hawk? Katharina, what is going on
She's
here?
Doing her, like, full Katharine Hepburn. Like, full Katharine Hepburn yeah. mode.
She really gestures a lot, I noticed, in this episode.
Oh,
she loves this.
All she wanted was a desk. A little workspace.
That's right.
Yeah.
In the corner.
That's all she wanted. And she could have just stayed in there and, you know, could have just had a fine episode in there. Instead, she gets to see shadows and say, what if I make a deal with the devil? I'm like, what the hell did you see in those shadows? Jesus, what are you looking at? It's such a weird transference that makes no sense. Like, there's no direct analogy where it's like, you know, I look in the shadows and I see a dinosaur and, you know.
Cairo, city like, of the living.
Cairo, city of the living. I love John Rhys Davies. I think he is just the best. And he is so underused in this show, in everything. Why are we not building statues of him? Wait, he's so good.
He's two characters in Lord of the Rings.
I was going to say, yeah.
I know.
And Treebeard, right?
And Treebeard. I mean, like, so Peter Jackson has his... He has an open world to cast whomever he wants as Treebeard, and he picks John Rhys Davies. I mean, how did that happen? Because all hear the
now
voice.
That sounds like you're against John Rhys Davies.
No, I'm so on board. I was so happy, and yet when I'm listening to Treebeard, I'm like, that sounds just like Gimli. I mean, it's pretty close, you know.
Have my
own master hobbit, and my
tangent. So you and Sarah are in the Northwest Passage.
But we're coming up to the best part here because she gets an idea and she proposes to the crew what, Kim? Or Jason? Doesn't matter.
To make an alliance with the Borg since they have a common enemy.
Yes. Enemy, my enemy is my friend.
If you work with us, we will give you this technology that can defeat them as long as you let us pass through your space.
Yes, so she proposes that to the crew of the Voyager, and everyone seems to be kind of okay with that. Like, well, okay, well, sounds like a good idea. Let's do that.
And then she proposes it to the Borg, right? And they beam her over.
Stop. No, not before that, Kim. Before that, the crew leaves, and Chakotay stays around.
Chakotay.
And he asks he asks Catherine Janeway if she's ever heard of the parable of the fox and the scorpion. I were doing this episode, which is the only reason I care about this.
1 hour in.
This kind of bananas. Yeah, I know. 1 hour into this, the only reason I'm really fixated on this is because when I heard this parable, it really kind of, I guess it stuck with me because I've remembered all these years and I invoked it a few times. It's such a downer of a parable about this fox and this scorpion, and the scorpion stings the fox because it's in his nature. It's so sad, you know. It's like this Aesop fable. I thought, my God,
it's really not an Aesop fable.
I know. Well, let me finish, Jason. Let me finish here because this is this Aesop fable which I was clinging on to. I was like, my God. A human cannot be in our lives. We are that who we are, kind of solidified, and no matter what we do to try and change, we're gonna remain this person. Because Aesop, 2,000-3,000 years ago, figured that out, and he's a genius. And so I started invoking this a couple weeks ago.
At every opportunity.
And I said the frog and the scorpion. Because I thought it was a frog and scorpion. I must have looked it up at some point in time because I looked it back up on Wikipedia, and Jason did too. And Jason, where did this come from? What was the earliest that we can trace this back to?
Oh, you know, I had posted it and I forgot which. It's pretty old, but the gist of it was that it's about human beings not being able to change their nature, in essence. Right? Because that's the whole gist.
Yes.
But historically, I couldn't answer your question. I don't know what year it came out, but there was a few different origins. But it's very old.
It's not very old.
Actually, I take that back. Yeah, you're right.
It's 1954. It's an Orson Welles film. That's the thing. There is no Aesop fable about this.
Right.
The closest they can find is like the snake and the mouse, which isn't even that close. It has been like created and transmuted from like a Persian fable.
Babylonian.
It's come from all these. There was a tortoise and a scorpion, I think. And the scorpion kept on trying to sting the tortoise, but he couldn't. Mm-hmm. I mean, so like all these wrong versions. And then in 1954, this frog and scorpion thing comes out of this Orson Welles movie. And then Brandon Braga takes it and uses that, but he changes that too to the fox and the scorpion.
and thus we come to
no, but to, this is the
source and summit of this particular podcast.
So much of my life from that moment on, since 1997, basically, has been predicated on the idea, like this parable. This Orson Welles created fable, the story, which I thought was thousands of years old, has basically been gnawing away at me. And I'm like, oh my God, we can't change our nature. We can't change. We're all scorpions. No matter what we try and do, we're not going to be able to change. Because it felt like a truism. It felt like this was who we are. And then I find out, no, it was created like 70 years ago, man. No one knows what this is. Just garbage. This is a garbage parable.
Just because it's not 200 years old, you don't want to hear it anymore. You don't like the ideas behind it anymore.
Well, I mean, it's fine, but it's not. It hasn't been properly vetted. I mean, like if Aesop's sitting there, like after 2,000 years, he's like, "Hey, man, I've been thinking about this for a long time. This is the right one." And it continues in modern mythology. If like Brandon Braga is like sitting there, like, "Oh man, I heard this great fable, this great Aesop fable, you know, about the frog and the scorpion," like that would be okay because like after 2,000 years. People still found value to it. But this, he probably just saw this movie, this Orson Welles movie, and said, oh, I'll just lift that.
You still like the ideas. You're so taken with the concepts in it.
Well, I didn't like the idea. I was terrified by the idea.
But the scorpion and the scorpion and the turtle, which you were talking about, was actually from 1847, which follow the same exact principle, but he's carrying a scorpion across a river or something like that.
Yeah, and the scorpion tries to sting him, but he can't. Right,
so he drowns him.
Yeah, so he drowns him. So in that one, like wait, this is
who
like
drowns who?
The tortoise drowns the
oh.
Right. Yes. drowns the scorpion.
Tables are turned.
Well, see, that's far nicer, isn't it? It's like, aha, see, you betray me, I kill you. But this is like, I trust you, you kill me, we both die because we're all horrible. We're all just of no value and we can't change who
just
we are.
Just the scorpion. The frog's nice.
Well, but even the frog, but like the frog, like even his good nature is punished. It was so, it like this, like for 21 years has haunted me. This terrifying tale of like death and betrayal and trust broken.
Yes.
Oh. And then I find out that like there's nothing to it. And so the tag on this long story is that I tweeted at Brandon Braga like yesterday. And I said, Brandon Braga, like, so what's the deal? Like, because they changed it from the frog and the scorpion in the script to the fox and the scorpion. I'm like, what's the deal? Why did you do that? What's the significance of that? And he tweeted back, oh, I thought I wrote frog and scorpion. So he doesn't even know, man. Like, it wasn't even that moving to him.
You're like, frame of mind, all your glass shattering all around you. CGI glass shattering.
I know. It's like, what's happening? I don't believe you. Let's end this charade.
I still think it's an interesting fable, interesting idea, just because it's not hundreds of years old. I don't think it takes away from its depths of its concept.
Well, it to me, it frames it in a different, like, I mean, it gives me more impetus to not believe in it as much. If it's like, oh, this was in a movie in 1954 that kind of did okay.
I mean, so that's weird. Right. You like the idea.
Yeah. Well, I've certainly heard it in other venues too, and in another movie that I'd seen not long ago that it kind of stuck out to me, and I can't remember what it was.
It's probably from some.
Yeah, I don't watching remember.
Voyager. You know,
I remember where I mean, first thing, heard
no,
them.
No, it was Life of Pi or something like that.
Life I can't of Pi.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
I heard this more a long time ago. I don't remember where, but it wasn't from Voyager.
See, now this story, that's the thing, is that this story is it's strange, it's ephemeral. This is the thing. This is why I do think perhaps we're living in a different universe. That somewhere there's the three of us are not podcasting. Because instead of saying the fox and the scorpion, they said the frog and the scorpion. I'm like, eh, that's stupid. And like, I didn't pay attention to that. I never really got into Star Trek beyond that. And we're all living much healthier, better lives as a result.
What?
Did you guys hear that? I don't know if I figured out.
I did. I'm just trying to figure it out.
No, because Brandon Braga thought that we said, that he said the frog and the scorpion.
Yeah.
So what if the universe split at that moment?
And what we live if in the fox some and producer the scorpion? Along the line said, eh, I like foxes better. That's what I think is more likely. Fox sounds cooler.
But Brandon Braga is like, he was like the producer. Him and Joe Manosky like wrote this. So I mean,
somewhere down the line, someone changed it.
Or maybe the universe split. Maybe this.
Well,
is like
I'm finding some of the movies and TV shows where a character tells the story of the scorpion and the frog. Skin Deep in 1989, The Crying Game, Natural Born Killers, Voyager in 97, Drive. Maybe it was Drive that I saw it in the movie with Ryan Gosling.
Oh, maybe.
And
maybe
Magic City.
Magic City.
Yeah.
I think we're living in Magic City right now. I think.
But it was in The Crying Game and Natural Born Killers right before it was in Voyager when they changed it to Fox.
Small Wonder. I'm just kidding. It's an episode of Small Wonder.
Vicky the Robot.
Vicky decides that she's a scorpion.
I think we're all scorpions now. I think
you've been saying that for weeks. You think everyone's a scorpion.
Well, but see, this is so like seismic for me, because like it always bummed me out to think that we can't change our nature. That this is a truism, and yet and maybe it's still, maybe there is something inherently true in it, but knowing now that it's been kind of transmogrified throughout the ages, you know, from tortoise and scorpion to, you know, mouse and snake to all sorts of weird different variations, I think I'm okay with humanity. I think I have more hope for humanity that there is the possibility of change. Although we haven't changed.
I think of that parable, I think of it more of applying to other people, like can't make yourself crazy trying to change other people into something they're not. But for yourself, I think you can always change yourself.
Yeah, that's a good point. Well, there's that quote that's attributed to Maya Angelou, too. The when somebody shows you who they are, believe them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know about that. I haven't
seen
that.
Wait a minute.
Episode.
How old is she? How old was she when she said
it? Was she pre-1955?
Was she 300 years old? Ben, listen.
I didn't see that on the board. Have you ever heard the Maya Angelou quote, Captain? When you see a person, reveal who they are, believe them.
Well, we didn't even really talk about when she was impersonating the other captains when she was reading their, recollections of the board.
That's right. Oh, she didn't impersonate Picard. It was terrible.
Yeah.
See, that's why
her character wasn't supposed to notice she was doing it, which was kind of dumb too.
Well, I don't think anyone did. I mean, like, I'm listening to the Picard.
Oh, I did. I did right off the bat because I'm like, why is she acting this out so much? It seems ridiculous.
I did not pick that up at all.
It was not a good impression, but it was still like, she's really going over the top when she's reading their assessments.
Maybe.
So did we pinpoint again what made you fall away from Voyager? You didn't like how they were using Kes. What else?
Well, yeah, so we're coming up on it, and there's actually this kind of frog and scorpion analogy here, or fox and scorpion. The idea, so they come to this point where it's like, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. We have to basically give the bad guys, you know, the reason to kill off these people. There was something about it which just kind of struck me as wrong. That here they are out in the Delta Quadrant, and they're already trading away what makes them Starfleet in order to survive. And it's like, well, then you're not Starfleet. You're just a bunch of people flying around in spaceships, which is fine.
You didn't like the idea that they would just try to wipe out 8472?
Yeah, it just seemed like if Picard was doing this, if Kirk was doing this, find something else. Now, she's not Picard or Kirk or Sisko or any of those people. She's doing her own thing, and that kind of became her thing, where she's like, I'm going to do whatever it takes to get us home. I'm going to, you know, violate the Prime Directive. But then sometimes she doesn't. Sometimes she becomes like this hard ass, which is like, no, you've got to follow my rule, the rule of law, blah, blah, blah. So there was an inconsistency, which just kind of bothered me. I think it was like the last straw for me. Mm-hmm. And then the next season, they brought on Seven of Nine. I was like, oh, I am off.
Really?
Yes.
But how about the fact that Chakotay wanted to go against her wishes? Of course, actually, he just wanted to wipe out everybody. He spaced a whole bunch of Borg.
I know. Yeah, in the next episode, he's like, I'm going to kill you all. You know, I was like, okay.
I do appreciate in watching The Expanse that they do just call it, I'm going to space you. I'm going to space you.
Yeah.
So that put you off that they were trying to work with rather than just wiping out a species. You didn't like that?
I guess I just thought that at this point in time, I didn't, and maybe I have the same problem with Discovery, where it's just like, you're trading in so many of the core tenets of Starfleet that I don't quite know what you're standing for. You know, I don't quite understand, you know, what it is that's going on. I feel I don't know, there was just something about it which I just didn't like. I was just kind of done with.
Okay. And you hate Seven of Nine.
I didn't like Seven of Nine. I mean, it just felt such a ploy. Like, we put a hot girl in a skin-tight outfit. Maybe we'll get more guys to watch the show.
Mm-hmm.
And it ultimately didn't work. The ratings continued to drop.
It's a terrible idea.
Well, it's an insulting idea. It's an idea that's like, I mean, like, you know, that does a disservice to everybody if you think that, like, sex is going to sell. Now, what was happening, I believe, as the ratings were declining was, in fact, men were playing more video games. And they didn't understand that. And so they kept on trying to amp it up and bring in someone like Seven of Nine. Because we did a two on The Invisible Man. We brought in a very attractive woman in second season. It's like, oh, this will do it. No, it didn't do it. in fact, we had a large contingent of women who actually didn't like her.
Yeah, hated her.
They hated her. And so it's like, wait a minute. What's going on?
Well, because they had these characters that they became invested with and, you know, had feelings for. And all of a sudden there's this woman who's stepping in on their territory. That's exactly what happened. Yeah.
Is that right, Kim? I don't know. That feels. No. Did you feel trod upon?
No.
She wasn't an Invisible Man fan. What are we talking about?
Oh, Jason. Shush.
And my first edit occurs now.
Make a note of the time.
All right. So the episode ends. So that was a two-parter. We're going to stop at the first part because the rest of it, you know, to be honest, the second part of it was a little disappointing. It felt sort of like the best of both worlds. It felt a little bit like the whole Sleep Data kind of thing.
Sleep Data.
They shoot the bioweapon at it.
Kes starts speaking for the aliens. I can hear them. They're telling me to say this. Like, oh, come on.
It had no relevance. It's like they're telling me, you know, that we don't care. We're going to keep on going. You know, it's like, then why are you useful? They're just going to keep chasing us either way, you know? So, yeah, it was, you could tell that suddenly Harry Kim gets better and Kes's powers aren't that useful. It's like, well, these guys are just a bunch of assholes and they're just going to keep on chasing after us. Oh, okay, well, then shoot them. Great, good idea.
All the stuff about they discover that the Borg started this war with this species and opening a rift into another dimension that's fluidic space and all this stuff. I'm just like, oh, okay.
They're just creating all sorts of weird nonsense and then they're just, I don't know what they're doing in that second episode. We'll cover that one. Jason didn't watch that one.
He
didn't watch this one.
All right, well.
He read the Wikipedia entry. Most of it. He skimmed the Wikipedia.
I spent 9 hours at Dodger Stadium in the last 24.
Yeah, you've gone to two games in 2 days.
Yes.
Why are you doing that? What's that all about?
Well, because I bought tickets for my father, who'd never been to Dodger Stadium. We went today with his girlfriend, Chrissy. Yeah, the Padres were playing. Oh. And then my friend offered me free tickets last night because he had some from work, so a bunch of us went.
Boring. Now that's boring. Baseball.
Actually, we should have you watch Deep Space Nine, Jason, because they love baseball in Deep Space Nine. On Deep Space Nine.
Very good.
Yes. All right, so we will cap off this episode. That episode ends in a cliffhanger with Janeway offering to work with the Borg. And then she does, and then we get 4 more years of Borg shenanigans.
Hi, Jinx. Thank you,
Jinx. Hi, Jinx. Yes. high concept, hi, Jinx. But this was all about me kind of reconciling the story about the frog and the scorpion.
I think what I took from that is that you're just angry that it wasn't an older fable.
Yeah,
you were disturbed absolutely. By the concepts and the ideas of it, but found out it's from '50s. You're like, it's all bullshit.
Well, but I mean, like, that's just some Yahoo who's like 30 or 40 years older than we are who came up with the idea.
You still like the idea, though.
No, I don't love the idea. I told you that over and over
again. I mean, thought it was interesting.
The idea haunted me for years.
Yeah,
it haunted me, Kim. That's not like. That's fear.
I meant you found it interesting, compelling.
There's another fable that came out in the '60s as well that you're a fan of called Star Trek.
Well, that I can get behind. I can get behind all that because that is thoroughly vetted. And most of those are actually from older stories, too. This is just from nonsense. The frog and the scorpion.
So you don't care about the ideas in that fable anymore.
Because they came out in the
They don't 50s. Intrigue you anymore.
No, because it is created in the 1950s. I mean, it's fine. It's a fine story.
That's my next question.
What's that?
What is it about the 50s that bothers? It's not the rug has been pulled out from under him. Older.
This is actually a good thing. This is a good thing because now I can invalidate this. I can ascribe this to Orson Welles or whomever wrote this, and that's fine. A fine writer, but not someone 2,000 years ago, which. Had created a story which was so powerful that it's been remembered for generation after generation. Still this is only been remembered for generation now. That's it. Like two generations tops.
Okay. So now you feel like people's natures can be changed. You don't believe the principle in that fable anymore.
I still kind of believe it a little bit, but I don't feel ruled totally by it. I don't feel...
I feel like it's scorpions.
Like it's like maybe 60% true now rather than 100%.
Okay.
There may be other animals in this story. There may be other animals who are willing to help along the banks of the river now.
Jeez.
There may be cats and rabbits.
Quit rewriting this fable. Cats.
Oh. Captain, did you ever hear about the cat that watched the fox and the scorpion cross the river? There was a cat who watched this fox help a scorpion across the river. The scorpion stung the fox and they both drowned. Later on, the cat saw another scorpion, another fox. The cat warned the fox and the fox stayed away from the scorpion.
Chakotay, what are you talking about?
This is our chance to go up or down in the great spiral disc and get away from the Borg in 8472.
Get back to work, Chakotay.
I don't want to go into any more bullshit corridors and fire bullshit torpedoes anymore, Captain.
Who did the crossword in my TV guide?
Three-letter word for alien puppet starts with an A, ends with an F. Hmm. I'm stumped.
Arf.
And well, on that.
That's a science fiction program I can get behind.
Ow. No. I want to see Arf. It's a
Arf.
You know, if Alf was in Star Trek Voyager, I'd be okay with that.
But he was created in the 80s. It's too new. I hate him.
You know, there's a story about a fox and a scorpion.
Yeah, that's pretty good. What's this secret Alf impression that you've been sitting on all this year?
You know, Justin Roiland tries to do Alf impressions all the time, and they end up sounding not great. But we use him in the show of Hot Streets, and they're actually so much better than if he actually approximated a good Alf. It's, I think he was actually, who's the name of that guy? Oh, God, he's the husband of...
Willie?
No, he's in the Bracticon.
Jeez,
I can't remember the character's name.
Come on, get into Willie Tanner.
Alf, Mrs. Akmonic's cat is a neighbor, not a lunch.
Mrs. Akmonic.
Full disclosure, I've never seen Alf.
So there we are. We are stopping this podcast right now and making
you're
you
watch gonna
Alf.
Watch. You're going to binge watch Alf, and you're going to watch every TNG movie.
Yeah.
I will watch every TNG movie for every episode you watch of Alf.
Oh yeah, we're gonna get you to watch all the RoboCops. That's what we're gonna get you.
Yes, yes.
Garbage.
Oh please.
So dumb. Nostalgic attachment from your teenage years.
Oh. That's them's fighting words.
Oh, this podcast. Wrap it up.
Have you ever heard the story of RoboCop? There was a cop who was chasing after bad guys, and he was killed, and he was turned into a robot. They wanted him to side with the bad guys, but he fought for what he believed in.
Chakotay, why are you talking about RoboCop?
I feel as though we're all in a shell of robotics. We need to break out and be our own person.
Oh, terrible.
All right. Well, thank you so much for listening to this. I know this was important to you because everyone's listening. Everyone has to listen.
Dropped out an hour ago. Including me.
My audience is filled with foxes and frogs. I only podcast with scorpions. You are all foxes and frogs. And alfs and kitties. And blue Russians.
I forgot Alf ate cats, so the doctor must hate him.
Oh,
I didn't like that.
Yeah.
But you
I
like
was
this.
Not on board with that.
What is that?
Oh.
It's from RoboCop. Thank you so much for listening to this very, very important podcast.
So
this is
bad.
Changing life. So good.
Edit out
so
everything good. But the scorpion stuff.
I don't even edit anything out. Jason will answer for all crimes.
The apple and the scorpion.
I.
You!
Did you guys not hear it? I said, I'm Mike McCafferty.
Oh.
Weird.
Scorpion Miller.
And I'm Jason McCarris.
And I just want to talk about...
Star Trek!
Ouch.
Destruct sequence completed and engaged.
Don't you understand?
Error. Flaw. Imperfection.